And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Laz and Powers. This is Scott Powers, joined by Mark Lazarus. We're both of The Athletic. We're finally just the two of us. It's been a minute since we haven't had a special guest on. Well, we had with Corey Prom and then Marian Hossa. Now it's just, unfortunately, just you and I.
Well, as you can see, I have a special guest with me. It's Carlton, the Toronto Maple Leafs mascot, life size, I think this one is, because I've been banished to my 7-year-old's bed to record this podcast, the ultimate indignity, because the room I usually use is being occupied by my 10-year-old, who is doing art. She says she's making props for a play that my daughters are putting together called The Secret Lives of Mascots. So we're one day into Christmas break and we're so far off the rails already. It's going to be a long 2.5 weeks.
What sort of secret lives do they have, do you think?
I don't know. I'm kind of curious. I thought we were going to watch a movie or something tonight, but apparently I'm getting a show.
Yeah. You know? Can we record that and just make that the podcast?
I know, right? It'd certainly be more uplifting than talking about the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah, no, it's gotten bad. We'll have to get like a podcast like Hogan John's, you know, like where people go on YouTube and they can actually see you and your teddy bear.
Yeah, I mean, I got Carlton here. I've got the Lightning mascot, Thunderbug. I've got Harvey the Hound. I saw Mr. Met floating around somewhere. Oh, here's Mr. Met. Mr. Met says hi.
It's Mr. Met is very rich these days, huh?
He's having a let's do a Mets podcast. I could talk all week long right now about the Mets. There is news. There is happiness. There is joy.
It's a complete opposite of what a Cubs podcast is right now.
Wouldn't it be peak Mets if they spend literally $500 million on a roster and lose in the wild card round again?
Yeah, but at least they make the playoffs, right? Like, I feel like you need to spend money now, like to ensure, like this idea of spending smart money. Like, if the Cubs had spent the amount of money they did this season, last offseason, they probably would have been in contention, you know, like everything they would have cost them last year that they balked at. Like, you could have brought back all those players, and regardless of what you think of Bryant, and I'm going to go off the rails here myself. Dansby Swanson is fine. He wasn't the premier shortstop available, and he is not fixing everything wrong.
The Mets got him and moved to third base.
Yeah, God, it's just, that Carrera thing is just, that's crazy.
It is insane being a Mets fan, right? Because we're just used to bad things happening and bad ownership with the Wilpons and all that. And to all of a sudden have basically George Steinbrenner as our owner.
Yeah, you become like Man City over there. It's like a Manchester City.
It's crazy. crazy. And it's hard too, because, like, you know, you wonder what the NHL would look like if they had baseball's system, right? With the taxing and the revenue sharing. Like, a lot of these owners, Rocky Wirtz doesn't have Steve Cohen money, but he's got billions. Yeah. The Molsons have billions. Comcast has billions. Leonis has billions. What would the league look like if there wasn't a hard salary cap in the NHL? If it was just a luxury tax, would it be like the mid-90s when the Rangers basically bought a Stanley Cup? Would you have teams with $150 million payrolls right now? Would Connor McDavid have a $25 million salary? It's wild to think about.
Yeah, it would. I feel like there'd be a lot more bad contracts, right? Like, I guess it'd just be.
Oh, God, yes. Oh, God. Can you imagine some of the contracts that would get handed out?
Yeah. At the other end, there would be teams that just would be paying very so little. Like, they couldn't even, like, there is some parity because of the salary cap, and the teams that, yeah, the have-nots would definitely be have-nots, right? Like, it would.
I'd like to see with baseball. Like, I'm generally pro-player. Like, I'm pro-labor. I want to see the players get as much. You read Sean Gentile's interview with Eric Lindros in the NHL 99 today, and it's great because Lindros got a really bad rap when he was a player in the 90s. Everyone called him like a whiner and this, that, and the other thing. And now he's looked at as like a pioneer for player empowerment, and it's a good thing. And, you know, hey, go get your bag. You know, I don't feel bad for billionaires who have to shell out this money, and they're profiting off of them anyway. So, hey, go get your money. But what baseball needs is a salary floor. That's what the NHL has that's really important, I think, is the salary floor. Like, if the Pittsburgh Pirates had to spend at least $70 million on their team, they'd be a lot more competitive than they are at 30 when the Mets are at $480 million. It's just crazy.
Yeah, something I'll get into, I want to write about probably close to the deadline, but the Blackhawks are going to really struggle to get near the floor next year. Like, it's going to be a massive challenge. Like, I think they're going to try to take on another contract or two at the deadline. But even then, like, maybe Tenorti gets like a $15 million extension, or, you know, like something. Like, they're going to spend some stupid money, and they don't want to spend it. Like, I don't think they're at the point where they want to invest in anyone. I don't think there's any great free agents, and it's not like, I don't think they're going to, they're not going to try to, I don't think do anything crazy right now, even with, just signing anyone to bring aboard. But I think they're going to have some challenges, because once you lose $21 million in Kane and Taves, and people keep on talking about Seth Jones, but Seth Jones actually helps them. Like, they need a few more Seth Jones contracts, at least in the short term, because to get to 60, whatever million is, like, it's
yeah, you can't tough. Trade him to Ottawa right now. You need that. You need that.
Yeah, no, that's a necessity. So, like, I think a couple of guys will get paid really nicely. And I think they're in a position where, they're almost in a position where they, like, I know it's going to look like the other team needs to trade a contract, but the Blackhawks are in a position too where they need to take on a contract, because there's a lot of money that falls off there, and there's not a lot other than Seth Jones and I guess Tyler Johnson makes what, $5 million, and Connor Murphy, but once you lose $21 million, it depletes pretty quickly.
Well, it'll be interesting to see, like, if the Blackhawks win the draft lottery.
I was thinking offer sheet. Like, the word I couldn't think about was offer sheet. And they're not going to offer sheet.
Oh, man, it'd be fun if the Blackhawks just played the offer sheet card. That'd be great.
Well, right now they lose their first pick then.
Well, yeah, there's a minor problem with that. Yeah. But I'm curious, because if they do get Connor Bedard, if they win the draft lottery and they pick Connor Bedard, might they be more interested in giving him somebody to play with these next couple of years? Might that speed up the process of getting free agents? Because if they don't get Bedard or Fantilli, then they're going to tank again next year.
Well, I don't think that's what anyone really realizes, is that next year might be worse than this year. Like, I think Krejcinski's here. I think Bedard or Fantilli or whomever might be here. You know, yeah, if any of those guys are probably here other than Michkov. But I think next year is even worse. Like, you lose Cannon Taves, even if you don't trade him. I don't think they're re-signing them. I think you lose Anastasiou, Domi, and maybe you replace those players with similar type players that you probably want to pay and try to flip. But yeah, I don't see them diving in. Like, there's just not a lot of big names. Like, the guys you want to, I think you want a certain type of player to be around those guys. Like, you want the right veterans, but you also don't want to. Like, I think the last thing Kyle Davidson wants to do right now is also to burden himself with a bad contract. Like, you don't want to bring a guy on.
It'll be all 1 year deals. It'll be all 1 year, 1 and 2 year deals.
But I mean, most Pocky players don't want that. You know, most players when they're UFAs, they're looking for the 5 or 6 year deal to put a cap on the career and, you know, really
make some bang. You're going to get, like you said, you're going to get another Max Domi type, another Andreas Athanasiou type, a guy who's looking to resurrect his career or prove he can still play, get some big minutes. The attraction of potentially playing with Connor Bedard would draw players to come here for maybe a 1 year prove it deal.
Yeah.
Where they go, you know, let me go play with this kid, set him up for a whole ton of goals, make my bank that way by doing that. Like, it will be appealing to player. Someone like Patrick Kane might be more willing to come back if he's playing with a Connor Bedard, even if he's been traded. It's not inconceivable. I'm not saying it's likely, but it's not inconceivable that he'd be like, you know what? I can come back to Chicago. I can play with this kid. I can make, they can give me all the money in the world because they got to get to the floor. You pay Patrick Kane $12 million 1 year contract next year to play with Connor Bedard. That'd be incredible. Highly unlikely. But those kind of things become feasible when you have an attraction like Connor Bedard.
I had this thought earlier today. I thought that depending on what they can get for Max Domi, which everyone's told me now like a third or fourth round pick, and maybe that's worth it for the Blackhawks. But Domi might be the type of player that you say, you know, if you come back next year, we'll give you $6-7 million, and it you know, like you're probably not going to get that anywhere else. But it's sort of you fill a need salary wise, but you also fill a need. I think we've heard positive things about him. At least certainly our experience has been positive. Like
he's playing pretty well.
As long as he's the type of player they want to, you know, like to bring that type of player that you're familiar with, that's familiar with Richardson, like someone like that might make sense for them to be back. And fill multi, you know, purposes.
Yeah. I mean, why not? He seems happy. He's, you know, he cracked a joke today at the morning skate or at the practice. He's, you know, someone, I think it was Joe Brand at WGN, asked him, like, hey, you got any plans for Christmas? And he goes, yeah, my family's visiting. You know, I was in Columbus for 2 years and nobody ever visited me, but now I'm in a nice city and people want to come visit me. And I tweeted it out because it's, hey, ha, ha, funny. And oh my God, my mentions are just a shit show for the next week and a half now because of this. I've ruined Christmas with Max Domi making a joke.
Was Hedger upset too?
I'm sure. I haven't heard from him yet, but I'm sure he will. I don't know. You know, I know that Columbus has this, like, an unfair inferiority complex because they lose so many free agents and everyone shits on them as a town. I like Columbus. It's a really nice place to live. It's a big city. It's got good restaurants. It's got bars. It's a nice place to be. You know, Jack Johnson and Connor Murphy, they love it there. They've made it their permanent homes. A lot of people like Columbus. Columbus is fine. Max Domi made a joke. Relax. Just relax. Let's not try to stomp on the one guy with personality, the one guy who will make a joke like that. Let's not make him, you know, turn into every other hockey player.
I get the sense that he doesn't care, though. Like, I mean, he knows what he's saying.
I hope not.
Yeah.
I like Max. I you know, when Domi came and, you know, Mike Russo was out at the player tour in Las Vegas and he was texting me, oh my God, you're going to love Max Domi. He's great. And I'm like, all right, we'll see. He's great. He's funny. He's available. He likes to talk. He's happy to see you. And to talk about whatever, his teammates seem to like him. I know that he gets a lot of shit because he takes some penalties. There's some Andrew Shaw in there with some of the penalties he takes. But he's been a good player for the Blackhawks. He's been arguably their most consistent forward this year. So it's possible. I mean, why not? He likes it here. And if he's willing to suck it up in the next few years and come out the other end, yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, I think money also allows people to suck it up a little bit easier, right? Like it eases.
Yeah, he's not getting $7 million anywhere else.
Yeah. And you also, I don't know if you ticked them off, but you raised the ears of the Nashville crowd yesterday too with your column about how as bad as the Blackhawks tanking is, that that you don't necessarily want to be in the situation the Predators, who don't have any outlook for the future because of how their contracts are, you know, built and how the team's built. And it sounds like people are like, oh, what the fuck are you saying? But then they sort of read the column and seemed to be like, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, the initial tweet I put out after the game made it sound worse than I probably was. And then everybody read the story. It's like, oh, no, I agree with this. And, you know, this is true. We're totally screwed in Nashville. It's a shame. It's just, like, it's just a truly terribly built team. Like, I don't know what the hell David Poile is doing there. Everyone signed for like 30 years at $8 million, and none of them's a top guy. Roman Josi is a top guy. Juuse Saros is a great
I don't think anyone wants to hear me talk about Roman Josi in Nashville anymore. Yeah.
Well, everybody thought I was just saying, oh, this is the asshole in Chicago who left Yossi off his Norris belt. Like, no, that's
and
the
I
other
said, I can get, I should have probably put him fourth or fifth, but my whole thing is that it's not the best offensive defenseman. Like his defensive metrics were just god awful. Like there are other people that put him further down, and maybe you can argue that he should have been fourth or fifth, and maybe he should have been on my ballot, but he should not have won the Norris last
year. Well, you're talking to the guy who, God forbid, once left Patrice Bergeron off his Selke ballot a few years ago. And I still get probably five to 10 tweets a week still from Bruins fans mad at me about that.
Oh.
I mean, Elliot Friedman left him off his ballot that year too. 11 of us out of 100 did. And I don't think anyone else gets that shit. I just don't, you know, come at me.
Yeah,
I had Bergeron number one last year. He'll probably be number one this year. But there's no digging out of that hole.
No, I told it's been a lifesaver not seeing the tweets of people who don't follow me. Like there's just I'm sure that there are a lot of natural tweets out there that who think they're talking to me, but I never see it just because that filter was.
Well, it's funny because when I left the arena last night, I was like, oh boy, this is going to be Nashville fans. I mean, I fully stand by what I wrote, and I'm 100% correct. There's nothing worse than being permanently mediocre. That's what the Blackhawks have been for the last 5 years. They're finally doing something. It's like being the 2010s Bulls, right? Where you're just trying to get one round of playoff revenue. You're just trying to squeak into the playoffs and get it. It's an awful, awful place to be with no hope whatsoever. So I left the arena going, my drive home going, oh, I'm going to get home to like a million tweets of people just saying what an asshole I am. And then I got home and almost every single tweet's like, oh yeah, we're totally screwed. This is spot on. Like Nashville knows what's up.
Yeah, no, that's good for them. What you were at the game last night? It feels like many games as of late where there's some hope and then there's no hope, and it just they have two eight game losing streaks now within
separated by one win.
Yeah, that's was it the Rangers win? Yeah.
16. Yeah, they've lost 16 of 17 games. It's almost. Like I remember during Jeremy Colliton's first year, they had 2 8-game losing streaks. They were separated by a few months, and I couldn't believe, like, how do you have 2 8-game losing streaks in 1 year? They basically have 2 consecutive 8-game losing streaks. They went almost 23 periods without even leading a game. That is unfathomable. They scored twice in like 37 seconds last night or a Wednesday night, and it was their first lead in 456 minutes, I think it was. Like, how do you not accidentally like bounce a puck in off your ass early in a game and take a 1-0 lead? Yeah. Like, it is incredible just how bad this team has been.
I guess what's incredible is Kyle Davidson probably feels like for 2 weeks here, you guys are asking me like, what am I going to do if things don't go bad here?
He's like, I told you so. I wasn't worried.
As he's flying around the world looking at prospects, and yeah, he wasn't. I think the only misstep that they've done in this teardown may have been how they've dealt with Soderblom. I think they broke him a little bit, like where he gave up 7 the other day, and then he played in Rockford 2 days later and gave up 5 or 6. Like this kid, from all accounts, early in the season is going to be the future number one, and he looked pretty good, but. Things got bad there, and I know they wanted to keep him in net, and like there was talk before the season about signing another veteran, and I know that would have complicated things, but I think right now he's not in a good place. Like it just I think he got beat. Like he wasn't in the net for, you know, like many wins this year, and he was playing well, but then yeah, I think it just things went off there, and yeah, they give up 7 goals and then go to Rockford, and yeah, for things not to go well either. I think that's the only, you know, I'm sure that Peter Aubrey and the IceHogs, you know, kind of work him back up, but it felt like the one thing where that, like the one guy you didn't want to rush too soon.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point was of signing Mrazek trading for Mrazek and signing Stalock was to not put Arvid Soderblom in the NHL this year, right?
Yeah.
To keep him safe in Rockford mentally, and they brought him up and he played really well. I mean, his numbers are atrocious, but he looks every bit the part of an NHL goalie. Like, there's a real good goalie there. And, you know, I forgot who I was talking to. It was one of the players, and I asked him, like, do you have to, like, be in his ear and remind him that, you know, don't get discouraged by the score? Like, we all know how good you're playing. He's like, we tell him all the time. Like, all the time, the players are not apologizing to him, but we're constantly telling him, look, you're doing great. Don't worry about the numbers. You're doing great. And I think he'll be fine in the long run. But yeah, I mean, that's, he ended very poorly up here.
Yeah.
That Capitals game where, and you know, it's going to take some time for him to mentally reset. That's a pretty good Rockford team down there. I'm sure he'll get back on track. But ideally, he doesn't see the NHL again this year.
I guess, like, with Stalek and Mrazek, like, there was the possibility, like, it came again and be like, you know, these guys aren't exactly, you know, they haven't been healthy. Like, this, it felt like the worst case scenario came to life. And yeah, I don't know how it's challenging protecting that, but I think the Blackhawks knew that this was a possibility that, you know, Stalek was a concussion, so that, you know, that's difficult to predict. But Mrazek's had some groin issues again. And yeah, I don't know. It wasn't unexpected that those guys were been injury prone or that they've been out and that you've had to, you know, accelerate Soderblom. So yeah, it'll be curious. Rockford has been good, and I wrote about that like a few weeks ago. They, you know, have Vlasic's injury now, which doesn't help them, and Phillips being up, and you know, some of the Blackhawks, you know, Tenorti being hurt and stuff, kind of pushes some of those guys up. But for the most part, that, you know, they have a lot of veterans in Rockford, and they're still competitive. So. And I'm sure, yeah, I'm, you know, with the schedule, the way that Rockford plays, it gives Soderblom probably more time on the ice to, you know, work on development and focus on those issues. But yeah, I feel like that was the one area where it was like, I felt like that was possibly going to go wrong, and it has gone wrong. So, we were talking before we got on some about the potential rule changes, and I wasn't that familiar with it, but you had mentioned that there was a proposal of 84 game schedule?
Yeah, they had an 84 game schedule. I think early in the mid 90s, I think it was. I remember when I was a kid, they had it for a few years. But there's talk. Greg Wyshynski reported. I think Elliot Friedman backed it up too. That there's talk about going to an 84 game schedule so that they can balance it out, where you play everyone in your own division four times, everyone in the other division in your conference three times, and then everyone in the other conference two times. So you still get every player in every rink throughout the league, throughout the year, but you also kind of boost up some of those rivalry games. And the way that they would balance it out is by cutting back on the preseason, which we'd all love to see four game or six game cap on the preseason. I think, what was it? Edmonton played 8 preseason games this year. I think crazy. It was insane. I mean, the funny thing is the NHL preseason is only like a week and a half long, as opposed to like the NFL one, which is just months in baseball, which is 40 games or whatever, and we all hate it so much that we're trying to get it even shorter. But the initial report was like 8 games a year against your division opponents. I was like, oh god, no, not you've already ruined the playoffs, let's not do that too. Like, there's only so many times I could see the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues. But it's interesting. I you know, there's talk that maybe that would incorporate some of the as we coined it, the Tave schedule, which they did during COVID, which was, you know, start, you know, keeping a team in a city for a couple of days at a time to get a couple of games in, and limiting travel and protecting players' health and sleep a little bit better. I'd love to see more of that. I really liked that setup during the COVID season, and I think that fans would enjoy that now that they could be in the building for it. So I'm just glad to see. I don't know what will come of it, but I'm glad to see the NHL is at least evaluating the possibilities of things. Gary Bettman's always so dismissive of changing anything, like adopting an NBA-style play-in tournament. He's like, hell no, nobody wants that. You know, he's always, you know, it's like his quote a couple of weeks ago about like, oh, nobody minds the digital Dasher board ads. They're great. Who are you talking to?
Yeah,
everybody hates them. They're horrible. So it's good to see the NHL taking something seriously that might actually be beneficial. I'd like to see that.
Yeah, I'm always hesitant to adding games, but I guess if you're decreasing the
preseason, I know there's already so many of like we've talked for years that like a 70 game NHL schedule would be perfect. Like 68-70 games would just be perfect. It's such a long season, and the season's going from early October to like the end of June now. Like, Pierre LeBrun always gets on this hill every year about the Stanley Cup should be handed out by May 31st every year, and I'm all for it, man.
Yeah,
it's just it's crazy when you see like, you know, you're in the first round of the playoffs, you're like, on this date in 1979, the so-and-so won the Stanley Cup. It's like, what? Now? April?
Yeah, I'd be all for cutting the schedule and adding some kind of in-tournament. It adds, like, that's what I love about the Premier League and some of that. It's like, there's teams that are well out of it and aren't going to compete for the Premier League championship, but they, and the fact that the other teams don't take the other competitions as seriously sometimes, so... Yeah, like other teams win it, and it gives fans something, you know, a bit of hope. And You know, we had the round table today with all the teams who could be within the Bedard sweepstakes, and all those teams are there. No one's thinking Stanley Cup. Like, it's, I know everyone points to St. Louis Blues being in last place in January and turning around, but it's so rare. Like, none of these teams are, they feel like it's bad luck or a goalie's going to change anything. Like, they're just, the hope is lost, and now it's all kind of turns out to, like, are we going to be the worst team or not, you know?
Yeah, I walked into the arena on Wednesday night. I'm like, oh my God, there's still like 50 of these games left. Like, what the hell are we going to write about? What the hell are we going to talk about? What the hell are people going to watch? I mean, I've been impressed by the crowds. Like, it's still like, you know, getting 15,000-16,000 people at a Blackhawks game right now is rather impressive to me. And, you know, people are still reading our stuff and listening to the podcast. We love and appreciate all of you. It shows what a hearty fan base this has become. But good God, like, what's it going to be like in March? If Kane and Taze get traded, and Domi, and Athanasiou, like, what in the holy hell is this team going to look like on those long road trips in March? Oh my God, it's going to be just brutal.
Yeah, and I plan to be in Rockford a lot and go and see Bedard and Fantilli and try to get out.
I'll just follow Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taze around the country.
Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
But we did put out a call out for questions. We have a lot of questions, so maybe we can, I'm sure we'll be asking fans and
through Phil professionals that we are. We have not vetted any of them. We haven't looked at them ahead of time, so this could go very wrong very quickly.
So the first question from Marina, since we're likely to get the first pick, is it safe to assume we will pick Bedard, or is there a different prospect that you think may take his spot? Well, the first pick, if you finish the worst team, it only guarantees you one of the top three picks, and usually that's not the greatest thing. But this season it is, because of having Corey Pryman on the podcast a few weeks ago, and you should check that out if you haven't listened to it. But he got into it about how the first four prospects, you know, potentially could be top picks in other years. So I think that's, you know, regardless of where the Blackhawks, the Blackhawks want to finish last, to guarantee themselves one of those first three picks. And then, you know, it seems to go right now, it's going Bedard, Fantilli, and then Michkov, or who's the other guy now? I'm blanking on Carlson. And Michkov has its own, you know, like, if the Blackhawks get the third pick, there's certainly questions about Michkov because he signed through, I think, 2025 in the KHL. And so it kind of delays.
It really feels like Michkov has to wind up in Arizona, right? Because his time frame matches up with their time frame for the new arena. It makes too much sense, you know, that they could just limp along these next 3 years, just draft Michkov now, and then he comes in, and they got their star attraction right when they walk into their new arena in Tempe. It just makes too much sense.
Yes. From Sandman 730 World Junior Championship preview, which Hawks prospects are participating? Who should Hawks fans watch? You can watch Bedard and Fantilli and some of those draft prospects. So I think I'm sure the Blackhawks will have personnel filled there like most teams, but those guys. And then the Hawks have a bunch of players in Canada. I wrote about it a little bit, at least who was in camp, but it was Colton Dock, Kevin Korchinski, Ethan Del Mastro, and Nolan Allen are all on the team. And then there's one Sweden prospect who, he's actually the captain. Oh, I'm blanking on his name right now. I'll look it up. But he's not much of a huge pro. He hasn't had much of a luck in the SHL, but he's, and then I think, well, Frank Nazar probably, you know, potentially could have made it for the US if he wasn't hurt. And then Ryan Green, who was at Boston University, got cut from the Canada team. So there are five five prospects in the World Juniors and then a bunch of draft guys that certainly could come into play.
Got a question from Jenny. She asked, why, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier, why Max Domi was included in that really cool Last Supper photo they took on the Chicago River when all the guys were in town for Marian Hossa's night. If he's only here on a one-year contract, and this is what I'm saying, everybody really likes Max Domi. He's fun to have around. He's a good teammate. And, you know, maybe they, you know, it is interesting to see him out there with Keith and Seabrook and Crawford and Hossa and Taze. He's one of the guys. And, you know, you never know who might become a long-term piece. Not everybody has to be 19 years old to be considered a long-term piece of the future. It's possible. If you're only going to get a third or a fourth rounder for him, fuck it, keep him.
Victor Sternberg's the other prospect. Yeah, it was a little odd for, it was a little odd for Domi to be in the picture, and even Jones a little bit. I thought, but it sounds like they wanted to include some current Blackhawks and kind of have the past and the
passing of the torch.
Yeah, sort of thing. So it was, it was sort of odd because there weren't many. Because like a Doc or a DeBrincat probably would have made a whole lot of sense, but yeah, there weren't, you know, like there aren't that many type of guy in there. let's see. How many from Alex? How many players do you think get dealt at the deadline? More specifically, who and for what return? Thank you in advance. I mean, Cannon Taves are the big ones. I mean, I think Kane brings back a first rounder and a prospect. I don't know what Taves brings back. I think
you get a second rounder for Taves right now.
Yeah, but I think you might need a third team to be involved in this.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. You will, yeah.
I think Domi and at the CU will be dealt. I think the Blackhawks would love first rounders. I'm not sure how realistic that is.
Jack Johnson could be an interesting one. I mean, Dom Lucician basically destroyed Jack Johnson as a human being in his 16 stats this today. Just absolutely annihilated him for his numbers. But he come off the Stanley Cup win last year. He played a decent role for the Avalanche last year. Everybody loves Jack Johnson. Everyone loves a veteran defenseman. He could be someone's chemo team, and you never know. So he's a possibility to get moved. You wonder about the goalies. It's very unlikely. Goalies tend not to get traded. But if a team is in dire straits, that's always a possibility.
Yeah. I think the fact that Mrazek's on has another year left, that I don't think that, you know.
Makes it tough,
yeah. Yeah, I think the only other guy that's on the 1 year, has 1 year left, is Jujhar Khaerad. So I think something like that potentially. But again, you were talking about fourth, fifth round picks. And even for Anathasiu and Domi, I think it's, you know, I was told I think third or fourth round was realistic. So, I guess we'll see what the production is like. But it's wild, isn't it?
I mean, the Blackhawks once got a first round pick for Ryan Hartman, like long before he became like top line center Ryan Hartman.
Yeah, but I think part of that was that people for like Nashville foresaw re-signing Hartman and bring him on a cheap deal. And like these guys are mostly rentals. Unless you foresee, you know, like trying to re-sign Domi or Anathasiu, but for them to become UFAs, like I think Hartman, there was, the draw was that he was an RFA, and there was, you know, like they felt like there was some potential there, but GMs are all do crazy things, so anything's possible. Change,
yeah, when it's February 28th, March 1st, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Jay Buban asks, tank seasons take a toll on players, but how do they affect beat writers for traditional media outlets? Game recaps lament every loss and celebrate the rare win when the opposite should be true. How do writers navigate the dichotomy between future success and current failures? He did say traditional media outlets. I don't know if we qualify as that. We're owned by the New York Times now, so we're legacy media now. But we have the advantage of not really having to write about every single game. We certainly don't do traditional game stories like we did in recent years. We're not doing like 10 observations off of every loss, because that would just be the most moribund thing I could think of, and nobody would want to read that. But it's tough. It's no doubt. Like you walk into that locker room every day, especially after a game, and it's like, well, what the hell do I ask? Like, Connor Murphy's at his locker last night after their 16th loss in 17 games, and am I going to ask him about the penalty kill sucking? Who cares if the penalty kill sucks? It's designed to suck. Your team has been built to lose. How many times can you kind of ask a guy what's going wrong when it's supposed to go wrong? You're insulting him. You're insulting it, the fans' intelligence. It's a tough thing to navigate the game to game stuff. There's always good stories to tell. There's always features to write. We're going to have stuff throughout the season. We've had stuff throughout the season. There's columns to write. Like, you know, when you see the Predators and you can kind of do a compare and contrast, we've done that with a few teams. When the Kings are in town, you can write about how far things have fallen for both franchises, the different trajectories over the years. But the day-to-day, that's where it becomes really tricky. It's just like, I don't have anything to ask any of these guys after a game anymore. Nothing. There's nothing to ask.
No, it's it's definitely become more challenging, and it's only going to get more challenging. So, yeah, I think you, people have seen us move further. Like, I mean, when they were relevant there for the first 2-3 weeks, I mean, we were more diving into systems and more of the day-to-day stuff, and now you'll see more prospect stuff and more big picture stuff. And I think the Cannon Taves storyline is going to be there until the deadline, and certainly there's gonna be a lot of Cannon Taves coverage.
We're gonna milk that baby.
Yeah, and the trade deadline stuff will certainly eat up a lot of time and space.
It's kind of a shame too, because Luke Richardson is very, very unusual in that he gets into the X's and O's. Like, he will talk the nitty gritty about where F3 is supposed to be on the forecheck, and he'll break down his systems for you in a very easy to digest and detailed way. And most coaches are just loath to ever do that. So we have this guy who's willing to get into the weeds with us, but it's for a team that nobody wants to get into the weeds for.
Yeah, no, and I think some of it's interesting, and I think we've written some about it, but I don't think, unless I'm really wrong, but I don't get any sense that readers really want to dive into this team. It's more about the future.
Well, because the readers know, and we know, that most of these guys aren't going to be here on the other end.
Yeah.
Like, it's not really, it doesn't really matter what the second power play unit is doing and what it looks like right now, because they're not going to be in the picture when this stuff matters. So that's the fine line we have to walk as writers, is like, I used to always say that when the Blackhawks were really good, it was tough to gin up controversy during the regular season, because, if the power play was struggling, who gives a shit? They're going to win every game anyway, and they have the best penalty kill in the league, and they score 5-on-5 at will, and they're just destroying teams in puck possession. So it was hard to gin up, and even if they were like in third or fourth place, it's like, yeah, whatever, they're going to be fine. They'll make the playoffs as a 6 seed, and they'll win the Stanley Cup. Now we're on the other end of that, where it's tough to really get animated about anything on the ice, because it feels like it doesn't matter. It just doesn't hold any weight.
A question from Kevin Torbick. Does anyone really believe that one player is going to turn this around in an effort to get Bedard? They've made this team so bad that in many years out, best case in, oh, they've made this team so bad that it is many years out, best case in my opinion. And Bedard is no guarantee to get or to be special. I think he's close to as a guarantee to be special as we've seen in recent years. And no, it's not one player, but it's supposed to be Korchinski and Nazar and all this. And I mean, I know the route's different, but it's no different than what the Blackhawks did. I mean, it wasn't that just Kane turned things around, but it was Kane and Taves. And I know that everyone's focusing on this year, but I honestly think next year could be worse. I think I think they're in the running again for a top five pick. Like, it's, like, you need multiple really high end players, and the easiest way to get that is through the draft. So I think the Blackhawks get a top five pick this year. I think they get a top pick next year. They got Korchinski. They have a number, they have Tampa's first round pick the next 2 years. So all of a sudden you have what, 7 first round picks within 3 years and a bunch of second rounders. And then, at some point they'll spend some money. So it's not just Bedard, but you need a place to start. And Bedard is certainly a good place. Like, certainly McDavid hasn't elevated Edmonton, but you've seen what, McDavid and Dreisaitl do and getting the right players around them. And Edmonton's even largely mismanaged how they're built. And, obviously they made a pretty good run last year, but I think the Blackhawks are hoping to get the players around them better too. And, the focus is on the defense, and I think the focus will be on the forwards going forward, but Bedard's a really good place to start. And not that this rebuild's going to, who knows how it goes, but I don't think the Blackhawks are off track in what they're doing now at this point.
I get the concern though. I mean, you look at Edmonton with Connor McDavid, you look at Toronto with Austin Matthews. What have they really done so far? I mean, the Leafs haven't gotten out of the first round. Edmonton got swept in the conference final last year after finally getting that far. And then you have, Alexis Lafreniere was supposed to be a generational talent. Shane Wright was going to be a generational talent. Now, their stock dropped a little bit as they got closer to the draft, whereas Bedard's keep staying high. It really does seem he's in that, McDavid, Matthews, Eichel kind of territory, which, great. That's what certainly every team needs. But I understand.
I feel like the conversation around Bedard has been a little bit different than Lafreniere or Shane Wright.
No, it is. But like a year out, though, Shane Wright was a huge deal, and Lafreniere was a huge deal. And as it got closer to the draft, it's like, all right, well, we'll see on these guys. I'm saying Bedard, that hasn't happened. Like, it just seems like the fever pitch is just getting higher and higher. But I understand that, you know, it doesn't happen. You get a Stamkos, and it took a long time for the Lightning to get to the championship.
For sure. No,
it's taking forever for Matthews and McDavid. It's not like Connor Bedard walks in and the Blackhawks are contenders next year. You know, when they got Kane and Taves, you know, they drafted Taves. The next year they drafted Kane. Then they both come in. And then it was the next year after that, they went to the conference final and then won the cup. That is highly unusual. Highly unusual.
Yeah.
And that's because you had all of Mike Smith and Dale Talon's picks built up, where you already had Seabrook and Keith in place. You had, you know, good Dustin Byfuglien, and you had all these players in the system already. The Blackhawks need all of these guys to pan out, just like all of those guys panned out. It's really what the Blackhawks did in the late 2000s, man, that's lightning in a bottle, and it's really hard to duplicate.
I don't know if the Blackhawks are doing is going to work out, but I will say that I think I wrote about this a few weeks ago, or whatever. But there's only been one team in the last like 20 years that hasn't had a top five pick be one of their key players. Like, this is how most teams are built, is through the draft, and then, you know, at some point you trade well and you do free agency well, but often it's drafting a couple of players that are really high end through the draft, and then, you know, getting lucky on some other players and building up, you know, your prospect pool, and then and figuring out other ways. But most teams are, they, you know, whether it's McKinnon or you know, even with, you know, Pietrangelo was when in St. Louis was a top five pick for the Blues, and I don't know. It's largely
about maximizing them when they're on their entry level or their bridge deal.
For sure, yeah.
That's right. Like, you need to succeed when they're not making 12.5.
Yeah, man. I mean, Blackhawks haven't had any success since Kane and Tape's contracts have gone in effect, you know? Like, it's I don't know. I think if you get Bedard, I think that's probably a good place to start. And then you certainly.
Oh, it certainly helps. It would certainly help.
Yeah. From T, have you heard any more news on Nazar? I know you reported the injury first. Interest to see if you have a timeline what the injury is. They've been really mum on what the injury is. I'm trying to respect that, because I think the player doesn't want anything out, and the college, you know, Michigan as a university has been pretty. So at some point maybe he talks and kind of something's a little bit more revealed. So I don't want to get into the injury, but it sounds like he's progressing. That there's some hope that he could be back by the end of the season. There's no pressure on it. You know, I think there was a thought that he might turn pro after the season, but I think this may delay that. So maybe he goes back to Michigan for a second year, but, it sounds like, you know, he had surgery and he's recuperating, and they're hopeful that he, you know, gets on the ice by the end of the season, is able to play for Michigan, who, you know, expected to make a run in the NCAA tournament. So we'll see.
We got a question for you from Marty. It says, can you confirm that Laz is a communist?
No comment. question. If Kane wants a trade, how picky do you think he will be about where he's willing to go, assuming it's going to be a team in serious contention? And how significantly could that reduce the leverage the Hawks have to get a fair return for him?
Hugely. Hugely. I mean, you're looking at Claude Giroux here, right? Like, last year, Claude Giroux, an icon in Philadelphia, one of the best players in the world in his prime, was entering the last year of his contract and had total say over where he went. And they could only get, what was it, a second-round pick and a prospect, because he only wanted to go to Florida. If Patrick Kane decides he only wants to go to the Rangers would be really stupid to give up a lot for him, right? If you're negotiating only against yourself, then, you know, you don't want to pull a Stan Bowman and just give away the farm for no reason. So if Kane is zeroes in on the target, whether it's Boston or New York or the Islanders or the Colorado or Edmonton, if he picks a spot and wants to go there, the Blackhawks will have no leverage. If he says, hey, any of these five or six contending teams I'm cool with, then the Blackhawks can really, you know, get a lot for him. But Kane holds all the control here. And, you know, I think fans are going to have to start tempering their enthusiasm over what they're going to get in exchange for Patrick Kane, because the Flyers certainly were underwhelmed with what they got for Claude Giroux.
From Steven Schroeder, discuss the Blackhawks players cards created by Dom Lucizen. What jumps out? Do you think the numbers reflect what you're seeing on the ice? I think for me, it's just this.
First of all, that's not a question. That's an order.
The order. I think what jumps out is that, you know, we obviously don't get to see all the teams all the time, and it kind of gives you a reflection of how the Blackhawks are. Like it tells you, obviously the Blackhawks have not been good, but it kind of puts things into perspective of how bad they've been and how a couple of guys. I thought McCabe jumped out. You know, I thought, you know, I tweeted the other day, I thought McCabe's been the Blackhawks' best defenseman this year, and you know, some of the numbers reflect that. But it also speaks to, you know, like Kane was a couple million dollars or something, like his worth was based on that. It just, yeah, it's
there was
it's,
a lot of negative. There's a lot of negative value on those lists.
Yeah,
and you know, you got to take everything. You know, even Dom will tell you that his model isn't perfect in every way, and he disagrees with it sometimes. But it's hard to argue with most of this. You know, the Blackhawks are bad, and their best players are underperforming. They're not scoring. They're not finishing. Their defense is atrocious. Their special teams have fallen off a cliff in the last few weeks. It's a bad team, and you're going to have negative value on your money when there's a salary floor and you build a bad team. So I don't think it's worth getting all worked up about, but it's hard to argue with what Don came up with there.
From Nathan, this first part of the question is interesting. What are the chances, percentage-wise, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews leave Chicago? Like, where are you at in this right now?
I have changed dramatically over the course of the year. Like, I was over the summer and throughout the first month or so, I was convinced that Kane was looking for a reason to stay and was going to stay. You know, we keep doing these stories where all the writers on staff, you know, make their predictions, and we have a new one coming out. I think it's the third time we've done it. And the last question on the list, our editor, Jake Leonard, sends these out. But the last one on the list is, where will Patrick Kane end the season? And the first time I put Chicago, second time I put Chicago, I didn't put Chicago last night. The first time he just seems so like he's trying, and he was great in the Nashville game, and I think that somehow made it even worse where he was generating all these chances and nobody can finish. And it's just like his mind is wandering now, and I think by the time we get to March, I think he's going to be out of here, which is a shame. Taves, I'm not so sure now. I could see Taves sticking around. I could see Taves signing a 2-year deal for $2.5 million just to be here. Like, it probably won't happen, but I'm 50-50 maybe on Taves. I don't know if he gets traded. I don't know if he can be traded now that the goals have dried up. And then in the offseason, I don't know what the hell happens. I really don't.
I'm close to almost 100% on Kane now. As long as they can find someone, I think he wants out. That this is, yeah, I think
it sure feels that way.
Yeah, with Kane, with Taves, I'm 50-50. I don't know if he comes around to it. I'm also closer to 100% of him not re-signing regardless. I don't know if there's going to be an offer there from the Blackhawks. Like I get the sense that they're ready to move on from both, and that, I don't know. I get the feeling that this is going to be just, you know, just kind of a new leadership, new change. And, you know, like I don't know. I get the sense that it's you know, I guess if Taves comes out and says publicly that I want to resign, that the Blackhawks are kind of put in a spot there. But I don't think the Blackhawks are coming to either one of them with contracts in mind. I think that they, I think they've obviously made things difficult enough for them to just even want to stay here. And I don't.
If Taves is still here after the trade deadline, March and April is going to be interesting to see, like, the kind of, you know, farewell tour they get in Chicago every home game. Is going to feel like a really big deal if everybody knows this is the end. I mean, that last game against Philly, the April 13th, that's going to be a very emotional night at the United Center if Taves is still here and everybody knows he's not re-signing. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. I guess it depends on if Kane's traded or both. If they end up with teams that still play the Blackhawks at the United Center, like it's
– Yeah.
I think the Rangers
– Maybe they'll actually finally do a tribute video for one of these guys.
They said with Strome got a little something, or Gustafson got a little
something. It wasn't a video, but they put a graphic up saying, you know, welcome back, Dylan Strome. And it's the first time, and then they also put Eric Gustafson on the screen. And it's the first time that they've welcomed anyone back. They didn't do it for Kubalik. They didn't do it for Eddie freaking Olchek, didn't get a video when he came back to Seattle. No Lankinen, no. The Strome one was interesting because of all the guys, it's the guy you probably treated the worst when he was here.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think that's covered most of the questions, right? I'm sure there's some other ones, and I feel I'm yeah.
All right,
sure.
now we're going to begin the Mets talk. Let's go back to the Mets. So
did they decide?
Do you like the idea of Correa staying a third? What if they don't re-sign Jeff McNeil after next year? Do you move Correa to second base so that Brett Batty can come up? And what do you do with Francisco Alvarez, Scott? Is he going to be the catcher? They finally got rid of James McCann, but is Alvarez going to be the DH? I really don't know where they're going to go with this. You're giving me a look.
No, this is not good. This is as a Cubs fan. This is.
I got to go on Tim Britton's podcast to get this off my chest.
Yeah, there's like a 20 paragraph like question in the mailbag for him.
Mark L.
Yeah, we got one more game and then the holiday break and then you're on the road trip.
Yeah, we got a lot. We got actually a fair amount of kind of fun stories planned for the next week or so. One of them that I'm writing on, that'll come out sometime next week, is probably the single most self-serving thing I've ever written. I haven't written it yet, but I've reported it. So when I write that, it'll be the single most self-serving thing I've ever written, which is with me saying a whole lot. There's some fun stuff ahead. I mean, the season's awful, but we're going to have fun.
Yeah, we got some ideas for next year, and yeah, we'll keep it light and certainly dive into the rebuild and yeah, the draft prospects and we'll. We'll have some guests on too. We'll try to fill up the time here somewhat. And yeah, it was nice to, yeah, prominent hosts were good. And I'm sure I'd love to get Marcus Kruger on still. And there's some old school Blackhawks we can talk. It's actually what we haven't talked a lot about the 10-year anniversary of the 2013 team.
Yeah, that season didn't start until January, so it doesn't really feel like the 10-year anniversary.
Can you imagine was it 24 game point streak to start off the season?
21-0-3. That was our first. Yeah, that was you and I started on the beat together. Me at the Sun Times, you at ESPN.
You were all excited. I hated every second of it. So it
was January, I think January 19th was the first game of the season, and off we went. It was fun.
Oh man, yeah, it seems so long ago. But yeah, we will be at. I think we're going to do a podcast next week. Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah, we got to do like a year end. Any? You have any movies you've seen or anything or anything you want to?
I haven't seen Avatar yet. I need to because my daughter wants to go see it with me. So like, it's so freaking long that it's been really difficult to find like the 9 hours in a day necessary. So if the snow's not too bad, hopefully we'll go on Friday and we'll see it. Check it out.
Do you have HBO Max?
I do.
Well, the Banshees of Inisherin is on ESPN.
Yes, I know that's. It sucks. All these great movies are coming out available on streaming, but all my kids are home now. So I can't watch any of them.
It's fine. They can watch Banshees of Inisherin. It's not that bad. It's not that bad.
I've been watching The White Lotus. So once I get through that is very not kid friendly.
I'm still on Homeland. So I'm on season 5, like episode 8.
Homeland.
I told you I started it from the first season. I know, man. So it's
you only needed to watch the first 2 seasons. That's all you needed to do.
I've seen the first 2 seasons. The whole point was to finish it. So that has been my exclusive thing, other than the World Cup for the last like 3 months. So
yeah, I made it through The Crown in like a month, and that was me paying my penance. Jesus Christ!
So I'm gonna do this, but I did watch Banshees of Inisherin for the second time. I thought saw it in a theater and then saw it again on streaming.
Probably a lot easier with subtitles on, right?
Oh, stop it!
Well, I watched Belfast with my mom back in March in Florida. And neither of us had any idea what was happening until I turned on the subtitles. So.
Yeah, that accent's a little bit.
Some of us need the help. Times.
So, anyways, all right. Well, we will be back at it next week. And yeah, we got plenty of stuff and even throughout the break. And we got a fun, a couple of fun stories next week. You have one and I have one. And yeah, plenty of coverage. So, for Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers. And this is Lazarus and Powers. Talk to you soon.
I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me?